Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome to a very special episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. You'll notice today, if you're looking on YouTube, there's a third man in the picture here. Needs no introduction anywhere in the Canadian investing world. Simone Bélanger, co-host of the Canadian Investor Podcast. Simone, thank you for joining Len and I this evening. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing well. Yeah, just excited to be here with you guys.
Outstanding. So why don't we do this? For the people who don't know you or your show, why don't you give us a quick rip intro? What are you about? What are you up to? And how'd you get started with your podcast?
Yeah, so we started in late 2019. The show is called the Canadian Investor Podcast, and I co-host that with Braden Dennis. We just kind of started chatting online. He's from Toronto. I'm from Ottawa. And then I had a work training in Toronto. We met in person, and then we kind of had the same philosophy. So we decided to start doing the podcast with the main goal of just helping people, get a handle on their finance and help them with financial literacy. So that's kind of the theme of the podcast. And our timing has been really impeccable. I mean, we had a few hundred listeners early on, and then it's really grown quite well, especially with, it's probably one of the good things that came out for the pandemic is we really got a steady increase in listeners throughout the pandemic last year, I guess, because we were already somewhat established, still pretty new, but so it's a fun podcast. If people want to listen to it, they can go on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's pretty much any of your platforms that you listen podcasts on, you'll be able to find us. And we're at CDN_investing on Twitter, or my personal Twitter is fiat_iceberg, which I'm sure you guys love. Yeah,
yes sir. So congratulations. I just noticed that you guys passed 300,000 listeners on your podcast. It's quite a milestone.
Yeah.
So just want to go into the question here. So when were you first clued into Bitcoin or cryptocurrency? What were your thoughts, and how long did it take for you to finally make the jump into BTC?
I mean, you guys will probably be surprised, but it was in 2013. So I was a pretty early adopter. I have to kind of give that props to one of my good buddies who's been an early investor in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Unfortunately, and that was probably one of the big risks early on, is that I lost it all with Cripsy, if you guys are familiar with that.
Yeah.
So it's basically it was an exchange that started in 2013, 2014, and the founder was basically siphoning funds from users, and there was a class action lawsuit. I think even Coinbase ended up paying towards that class action lawsuit because they used Coinbase to get some funds out. I mean, I probably could have get some money back, but I never kind of opted in through the class action lawsuit. And I'll be honest, at first back then, I didn't know too much about it. I was just, it was just kind of internet money, if I'd like to say, to me. It was really early on. And I remember Bitcoin had just like kind of really increased in price. And I was like, am I just too late? It was a whopping $300 for one Bitcoin. And I had half a Bitcoin back then. I had put, I think $500, and it was pretty hard to, especially compared to today, right? You have ShakePay in Canada, you have all these different Coinbase, Kraken. I think there's other ones I'm sure you guys know that I'm not aware of. Some pretty well-known ones, Binance, and it's really easy to just get money, buy Bitcoin. Fees are much lower back then. I think you paid like close to 5 to 10%, and you could only do it with a credit card. So it's improved a lot since then. So that's how I got started, really just one of my buddies. And then lost it all, didn't get back into it until early 2018. So I was kind of on the sidelines, and then the crash after the big run up in 2017. And then I just started dollar cost averaging from, I think, March 2018 pretty much ever since, just a little bit each pay. Yeah.
That's a, not only is it a strong strategy, but that's impeccable timing, on that beginning yeah. of the re-entry for you. So congratulations, buddy. That's great.
Mm-hmm, thanks. Yeah.
So you mentioned there that your podcast is about financial literacy. And I think Len and I try and do something similar in the Bitcoin space. There's a lot of noise in investing. And because of the pandemic now, you have a lot of cottage industry sort of like financial gurus on Reddit and Instagram. Like, I don't know about you guys, but if I see one more Forex ad with a kid who's like 16 driving a Lamborghini, like I'll probably throw my phone through my Mac and it won't be a good scene. But that aside, what would you say to somebody who's, you know, maybe just getting started in the equities world? Because there's a lot of people like that who are younger than we are, thinking about investing for the first time and these sorts of things. So someone who's getting into the equities world and maybe is, you know, a year into their investing story now and is thinking about Bitcoin, how would you compare sort of the two investment vehicles? Because there's a couple of big differences there. And I think if anyone's qualified to kind of break down the balance and the importance maybe of having both, it might be you, buddy.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, I think one of the big advantages with equities, and I mean, now it's through Bitcoin ETFs, and even if you're interested in Ethereum, it's also available. But one of the big advantages that we have in Canada is we have registered accounts. Specifically, one of my favorite accounts is a tax-free savings account. So it's really, it's an amazing vehicle. You don't get taxed on it for capital gains. You do have a withholding tax if you have U.S. Companies that pay a dividend. It's a small tax, but if you have a capital gains on those stocks, you don't pay anything. And that also applies with having a Bitcoin ETF, right? So they're eligible for those vehicles, whether it's a TFSC, but also RSP. They're also eligible for those vehicles. So that's an easy way to get started. I mean, the benefit with that, especially the TFSA, and I think personally, like pretty much everyone should try to max out the TFSA just for the how efficient in terms of taxes it is. But the TFSA is just a great vehicle to do so. You can just get started. You know, you have a strategy, you add, you know, just regular amounts. It doesn't matter if you make minimum wage or you make, you know, $500,000 a year. If you're getting started, you try to be consistent, just putting regular amounts each pay, whether it's 25, 50 bucks, doesn't matter. And then you pick some equities or, you know, some ETFs. And again, whether it's Bitcoin ETFs or not, and you just add regularly to that, I would say, you know, stick to really good companies. If you're not really willing to put the time in, that's fine. Then just stick to either index funds. They're really low fees. Just look at the fees. That's the most important thing. Same would apply for Bitcoin ETFs. There's a few out there. Make sure you look at the management fees. Although the Bitcoin ETFs, because they just started, you won't have the management expense ratios. They'll have those at the end of their financial year. So they need to all have their expenses for that. So the biggest things for those is, you know, the fees. It's really easy to do. You don't need to be a genius. You can just stick to broad market indexes and just be consistent with it. If you're looking to do a bit more work, then you can dig into companies. But again, I would say stick to solid companies. Try not to reach out into dumpster fires to try and find some value, or the classic Warren Buffett cigarette butts. And I'm sure we can dunk on Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger a little later.
So for the average young person, say somebody under the age of 30, who is just entering the market, what would be your ideal breakdown for equities versus crypto? And how often would you recommend somebody like that rebalance?
Yeah, I don't think there's an exact answer for that. So my answer will always be whether it's equities, to be honest, and crypto. I would say for the most part, just do the tests. You know, does it prevent you from sleeping at night? And that's probably the biggest thing in terms of rebalancing. So let's say you started early and Bitcoin was 5% of your total holdings, and now it's grown to 50%. if you're fine with that and you really believe in Bitcoin, and I know we do over here, then, you know, that's fine. You don't need to rebalance. Like rebalancing, and that's one of the biggest advantages for individual investors, is you're not forced by like institutional investors to constantly rebalance. And that's a really big edge that you have. Plus, if you constantly rebalance, depending on which broker you're using or exchange, there's going to be some fees associated with that. Crypto, like you mentioned, it is treated like capital gains. CRE came out with some, they came out with a pretty good piece on it. I think in 2019, it's still available. And you basically get taxed for any kind of transaction. So it doesn't matter if you're, you know, selling Bitcoin to get fiat or selling Bitcoin to go and buy some Ethereum or any other altcoin, you'll be taxed on capital gains. So, but again, if you're, you know, you're having trouble sleeping at night because it's way too big, then obviously that affects your quality of life and you should probably think of rebalancing right there. If you're really not sure and want to get started in crypto, I would say pick whatever percentage that, you know, if you lose it all, you're okay. And keep in mind, though, that the downside is always way less than the upside. Because even if you put 1% of your total assets in Bitcoin and it drops to zero, okay, so you lost 1% of your total asset. But if it 10x's from here, then the upside is always going to be way greater than the downside. And I think people have to remember that. A lot of people ask me about that allocation. I'll be honest, I'll get like DMs because they're open. So people kind of reach out to me. I don't respond to all of them because sometimes I'm just like, it's not even worth my time. But I do answer most of them, to be honest. And I think I would say, yeah, for the most part, just whatever you're comfortable with. And not everyone's going to be on the same path when it comes to Bitcoin. It's new for a lot of people. And I would say, yeah, that's the thing. Just invest what you're comfortable having in your portfolio. And you really can't afford to not have at least some exposure to it. That's probably it. And I mean, if my parents in their late 60s actually bought some Bitcoin on ShakePay and they have some Bitcoin ETFs, they not a lot, but you know, it's probably about 5%. I think anyone can do it.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here because you keep on saying Bitcoin ETFs and Bitcoin equities, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about that. What I care about is, are you, what is the number for you? Or hypothetically, I guess, for you, where you think that holding the underlying asset, the Bitcoin itself, is more beneficial than holding the equities. And if you don't think that, give me the case against it. Because on our show, we talk a lot about how part of the appeal of Bitcoin is that there's no counterparty risk. It's pure, unassailable bearer asset. Unlike equities, unlike all these other mm-hmm. things that are sort of reliant on traditional counterparties. So, what do you think about that? What's the number for you? And again, if you really think it's ETFs, I might have to cut the show off right now. I thought we were getting full Bitcoin bull Simone, I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a like, look, obviously, if you're a Bitcoin maxi, you're going to be like, fuck ETFs, like fuck all of that, and you know, like equities, you know, they're the worst. And I get that. But I think one of the things that annoys me the most about Bitcoin maximalists is it tends to be all or nothing. And I think they push away a lot of people because of it. And I think a lot of people get attacked because of it. And I have a more kind of moderate approach. Personally, I think obviously, if you want to put the work in and learn how to hold Bitcoin, preferably not on an exchange, cold storage, obviously, it's probably the way to go if you want to really own your actual Bitcoin and be your actual bank. But if you want some exposure, if you're not sure about it, that's when I think either equities is a good way to get your toe in the Bitcoin space, or the ETFs as well. And the biggest advantage I would say for the ETFs, if we come back to the TFSA, is, you know, for, I understand the whole idea of Bitcoin and obviously being your own bank, but for a lot of people, it's also creating that nest egg and be able to have a comfortable future, retirement, whatever it is. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's very attractive to have those potential gains being tax-free if you have it in a tax-free savings account. So that's kind of how I see it. For me, I use a Bitcoin ETF as a for my registered accounts, because obviously you can't hold directly your Bitcoin ETFs. Like I mentioned before, I do have an old pension that I transferred to a locked-in RSP. So you do have, obviously you can't hold Bitcoin from there. So what I kind of use Bitcoin is I use it a bit as a store of value and a cash equivalent. So if I'm not fully invested in equities, I use the rest. I put it in Bitcoin because I know it should keep that value over the long term. And I try to avoid having more than 5% fiat in those registered accounts. So I know I'm kind of dancing around it. It's probably not what you wanted to hear, but the vast majority of my holdings are definitely actual Bitcoin. Yeah.
Simon, how do you think the BTC time horizon compares with that of the buy and hold equities?
I mean, my philosophy, if you like, you say you listen to the podcast, so I'm definitely a buy and hold guy. So I don't buy companies that I don't plan on holding for at least 5-10 years. Obviously, things can change, things can happen that'll change your premise for specific companies. And I tend to invest in companies I believe in. Like I don't invest in Facebook, even though, you know, it's at some point, you know, in the past year or two, it's been very attractive in terms of traditional valuation metrics. But I just, you know, I just don't believe in what they do. And I don't believe in a company that uses people as their product, basically. So that's the way I invest. And I view Bitcoin as same thing. So it's something that I'm holding for a really long time. I've been having it, like I said, I started in 2018. I don't intend on selling anytime soon. And yeah, it's kind of the same philosophy for me. I'm just buy and hold when it comes to that. Yeah, just the advantages. It removes all the guesswork from it. You can dollar cost average. And yeah, it's just there's just a lot of advantages. And as much as I was annoyed with a lot of the comments of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger at the recent event, especially Charlie, and we can dunk on him a little later. You know, I like, whether you disagree fundamentally on a lot of things with someone, you can still, for the most part, you know, there might be some nuggets of, you know, really interesting things that they say that you can incorporate in your own investing philosophy. So you guys might disagree with me on 95% of the things, but maybe that 5% you do agree with me. And that's the approach I like to take. I like to, get a more reasonable approach, and I try not to, it's avoid the all or nothing approach.
So, okay, you said something there that I agree with. The whole investing in companies that you think are sort of doing the right things, we'll say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in Bitcoin, obviously, there's been a lot of commentary and criticism. And, you know, there's probably stronger words I could use there, but we'll leave it at commentary and criticism about environmental damage and things of this nature. And so, you know, on your show, and you've mentioned it, Brookfield, obviously renewables. So are you like, is Brookfield Renewables like your carbon credit so that you can invest in Bitcoin? Like you buy Brookfield so you don't feel bad about Bitcoin holdings? Or like, what do you say to people who are like, well, Bitcoin's destroying the planet? Cause you're now the moral compass of this show for sure, just based on that comment alone. Mm-hmm. So how do you square those two things?
Yeah, exactly. No, I've had Brookfield for, I think it's going on 4 years now. It's been one of my really good performers. To me, it's kind of a rock in my portfolio. And I think that's probably one of the downsides for Bitcoin. And I'll get back to the environmental FUD in a second. But I think that's why it scares off a lot of people. Bitcoin is the volatility. But people think volatility equals risks. And those are two completely different things. But I do enjoy having kind of that stable company like a Brookfield that pays a nice dividend. It's been a really good performer, has great management. Obviously, they're investing in renewable, whether it's hydro, wind, solar. They're doing all of these things. When it comes to the environmental FUD, I always get a little bit annoyed with that for Bitcoin, I'll be honest. The main issue with me I have is when you get these mainstream media, whether it's CNBC, whether it's Reuters, whoever they come out, and they'll come out with this comparison of, you know, Bitcoin uses as much energy as X country or whatever it is, like whichever, you know, is the hot news for that. And then you have Elon Musk who, like, I mean, He's another one. Don't get me started on him. But but you have Elon Musk, who's supposed to be this, you know, real probably more intelligent than all three of us combined. And you're telling me he didn't know about the whole environmental thing before Tesla started investing in that. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's all concerned with it. I mean, I would probably challenge him on that and say, oh, I think you're trying to get some grants from the U.S. government. It was obviously very environmental right now. But the environment FUD, I would tell people, look, compare it to the traditional financial system. And Bitcoin is probably using, if I'm going off of on top of mine, about 33% or 40% of that energy. And people never mentioned anything. Sorry about my dog. People never mentioned. They never mention anything about the energy consumption, right? And all the, you know, just thinking about the paper money, all that money that's printed, all those trees that went through, and all these various banks, financial institution, all the energy they consume. We don't hear that all that much for the from the mainstream media. I would say that I think personally over the years, the overall energy consumption from humanity will be trending more and more towards renewable energy, regardless of Bitcoin or not. It's just becoming cost effective compared to traditional fossil fuel. And it's just making a lot of sense economically. And you're seeing governments around the world actually taking action in terms of climate change. Obviously, in the US, we'll see maybe in 4 years, it'll reverse course like it did 4 years ago. So who knows about that? But I think it will naturally play itself out. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with some of the Bitcoin maxis that, you know, Bitcoin will push, you know, people to develop more renewable energy. That's something. There you go. I know Braden has a big issue with that, who's my co-host, but then he knows this stuff because he's an environmental engineer. So I usually kind of believe him when he talks about that. But I would say, you know, I think the proper discussion is to compare it to probably the traditional financial system and the energy that that it consumes. Yeah.
So I'm going to present you a situation that a lot of people are in today. And none of this, of course, is financial advice. So take this information with a grain of salt. If you had a choice today to buy a home in a major market, say like Ottawa, or put that money into rent and crypto, what option would you recommend?
I mean, yeah, it's... Problem with buying a home is it's really emotional, right? So for people, so it's not necessarily a financial thing. I did post on our Twitter account for the Canadian Investor. I did like this little spreadsheet where people can just plug in the different numbers because you know, the reality is that Bitcoins don't give a shit about not the Bitcoin, the banks. Sorry, just correct. You can edit that out. The banks don't give a shit about you, whether you can continue your lifestyle, right? When they check your employment, they check if you can pay your mortgage and all of that. They don't factor in everything else that, you know, your lifestyle, whether you like to travel, obviously pre-COVID, but whether you like to travel, whether you like to go eat out to restaurants and things like that. And I think that's one of the big considerations that people need to do. But obviously there's a lot of advantages with owning a home. Obviously you can have a yard for the most part that you can, you know, you can do whatever you want to the home, where renting, it's a little bit more limited. So it's not just a financial consideration for people. I would say, look, a lot of people just want to have a home, and I get it. We're kind of brought up with this thinking that, you know, owning is always better. I would say just make sure you do your due diligence. It's going to be more expensive than renting. There's no question about that. You can crunch the number however you want. And especially with prices, like in Ottawa, I think it's gone up 30% year over year. It's been pretty crazy. So if you do buy a home, make sure you do your due diligence and you make sure that you can afford it. And who knows where the prices will go. Chances are they'll probably keep going up if the government keeps printing money the way they are, because assets in general, whether it's equities, whether it's homes, whether it's BTC, when you compare it to fiat money, obviously if there's more and more money in circulation, chances are that it will probably keep going up, and especially as the economy keeps reopening. But I would say Bitcoin, I mean, it's probably a good choice for you if you want to keep that lifestyle. You're okay with renting. You don't mind not having as much control on your home. Then you probably should be considering Bitcoin over buying a home. And especially, you know, a lot of people are, you know, are self-employed or they're gig workers. They can live around the world. Well, why would you want to own a home if you're planning to do that? So Bitcoin, especially because you can have Bitcoin with you wherever you travel, right? So it doesn't matter which country you're in. You'll probably be able to use it in some way or fashion, whether you convert it to the local currency or not. But that's probably my best piece of advice to people is just make sure you crunch those numbers. But yeah, sometimes it's more of a finance. It's more than just a financial decision. And you'll see that realtors, any kind of realtor that's doing publicity advertising, they pull on the emotion string. That's always what they do, 100%. And when you ask a realtor, why is it a good investment? They rarely will give you an actual good financial answer. They'll always pull out to the, well, you know, you can modify the home. You do want to see your kids growing there and all that stuff, right? So just be careful. And realtors, obviously, they have their own agenda for the most part. They have code of ethics to follow. But, you know, they always have that. You always wonder sometimes if they have your best interests at heart because they're always kind of edging for their own commission, right? So.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny. I think I might change my Twitter profile bio to "Kids are a fiat scam" after Simone's comments there. I kind of like the ring of that. Glenn, can we get that on the merch, you think? I know we don't have any merch yet, but
I think we can. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I'll think about that. Okay, so Simone, this is a little off the beaten path here, but you mentioned something there that I think a lot of people in Bitcoin, especially the maxis, people of my ilk that march under my banner, are thinking about as far as mobility. And I want to ask you then about CBDCs that are sort of beginning to take shape in governments around the world, whether it's True North, Strong and Free, our friends to the south. These guys are starting to, I think, really not only consider, but starting to think about rolling out CBDCs as a mechanism for direct monetary response and, also a way to kind of keep track of who's where and who's spending what and all these different things. Make no mistake, I think we all agree it's probably a vehicle for I think it's going to be a net negative overall for most people, whether they realize it or not. So I guess my question is, what do you think about the introduction to CBDCs around the world, and how do you think that's going to relate to Bitcoin adoption?
I'm not sure if it'll have any really impact on Bitcoin adoption. Obviously it could. I know obviously China with the digital yuan is really at the forefront of all that. And they're, I think everyone kind of who's reading into that and looking, researching a little bit, and with the way that China has acted in the past 15, 20, 30 years, I mean, obviously they're going to use that as a tracking tool. We saw how they cracked down on Alibaba, Alipay, and Jack Ma a few months ago. Kind of, we didn't even know if he was alive, I guess, for a part of time. But that's just them trying to get more control over the financial system over there, because they were seeing that these big tech companies, whether it's Tencent, whether it's Alibaba, or, the other one, they were getting more and more people interested in their solutions, and that's when they really started cracking down, and now they're really pushing the digital yuan. I mean, it's hard to say whether it'll push Bitcoin or not. It really depends, I guess, how governments try to impose regulation and try to ban Bitcoin. And I say try because I don't think they'll really succeed by doing so. I mean, they can put roadblocks. Obviously, they can try to do it as much as they can. And China, I think there was a lot of people getting a little excited about the China announcement. What was it, a couple of weeks ago now? And to a lot of people, kind of started that downfall along with Elon Musk's tweet and the whole environmental FUD. I don't think really much has changed in terms of China and how the way they view Bitcoin. They've been like that since 2017 or 2018, I think. Yeah, it's a really good question. To be honest, I really don't have an answer for you. I don't think they're really, I think, you know, it's just a fiat instrument for the most part. I think there could be good things about CBDC for certain things if governments are trying to send money to their constituents, a bit like what happened with the pandemic. They're trying to get those funds really quickly. And when the states were a bit of a shit show when they were trying to do that, whether it was good to have stimulus or not, that's a completely other discussion. But I don't know. Your guess is probably as good as mine. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact because to me, it's just another way of looking at fiat, basically. Yeah.
Aside from Bitcoin, are you bullish on any other cryptocurrencies or tokens? And if so, which ones?
I thought I just messaged you to cut this question out because you talked about Ethereum already.
That's okay. I mean, I do like Ethereum. Again, I don't think you need to have one or the other. And I've always had kind of a 2-to-1 allocation, Bitcoin to Ethereum. It was probably 50-50 by the end of a couple of weeks ago because of the whole run-up. And obviously, if you read a little bit, a lot of that run-up was based on leverage and a lot of people got wiped out, not really understanding what they were getting into. And that's unfortunate. And that's probably one of the risks of crypto is because it's so deregulated, you guys probably see it. You have this like 100x leverage. Well, if you're 100x levered, it doesn't take much of a downturn for you to get wiped out. Yep. So, I mean, and people just don't really understand how it works. So I think that's probably one of the biggest, I guess, downsides of cryptocurrencies as a whole. But Ethereum, I think it's really promising in terms of the decentralized application platform, has a lot of uses. I mean, I can see really Ethereum cohabitating with Bitcoin. Personally, I see Bitcoin as being a kind of store of value, but also potentially becoming a reserve currency in the world. The way the US dollar is really devaluating, a debasement of the US dollar. I think they increased about 24% the total M2 money supply last year. I think I had done the calculation on my Twitter. I posted that and pinned it. So I'm of the view that both can kind of cohabitate together. I understand the gas prices have gone up and they can be very volatile. And we'll see if there is going to be improvements to the actual to the Ethereum network in the future. But in my view, they're the two that have the most important thing is they have the strongest network effects. And that's really important when it comes to cryptocurrency. And I talked about Facebook before. There's a reason why Facebook is still freaking popular, because if you try to open your, you know, a Facebook competitor, none of your friends or the people you know will be on that competitor.
I still use MySpace.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, does it still exist? But no, I think the network effect is probably the one thing that's the most underestimated for both Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Help me understand this, okay? I need you to help me square square this off, because you're saying all the right things, Simone. You're talking about fiat money is going to be printing forever. You're talking about network effect and reserve currency stuff. I get all that, but help me draw the details into your view on Ethereum as a value prop, because in my view, and I think this is probably the case for a lot of maximalists, but I won't speak for everybody. In my view, I look at Ethereum and I say, okay, DeFi makes sense to me. I think that's a good application for any token, be it Bitcoin, Ethereum, or something else, something that I think we're going to need going forward. All these things about taking people away from banks that are, like you mentioned, not looking out for them. No quarrels there. That's a fact. Banks do not care about your well-being. But as a value prop, the Ethereum token, isn't there some issue there? Because there's no really way, you know, to know what the monetary policy is going to be for that token over 5 years, say. There's no way to know whether or not Vitalik will hop into bed with the first government that gives him a sweetheart deal. You never know. So, I mean, help me understand why I should park money in Ethereum. I don't do it personally. And I'll, for the listening public, I'll never ask this question of another guest probably, but I like Simone. He has a lot of good things to say. And so I want to hear your thoughts on this. I'm curious about your take.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's to the advantage of of the Ethereum network to start increasing the supply. And historically it's been, you know, it's been increasing. Obviously it's not capped like Bitcoin. But you know, if you look at the historical increases, it's very reasonable. And I just don't think it's in the interest of the network to be increasing it like, you know, like governments would do for fiat. And the governments, and one really good book, I don't know if you guys read that, Layered Money. It's a great book to read if you want to reinforce your Bitcoin maximalism. I strongly recommend that. And he believes in Bitcoin a whole lot, the author, and I think it's Nick Bathia or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know Nick. Yeah. Okay.
So Nick kind of goes through the history. And governments really, when you start reading that, you understand that governments have really, they have an incentive to be creating more and more money over time. So they really have that incentive ingrained in them. Oftentimes it's just to be able to stay in power, or, you know, it's to fund various wars, it's to fund various programs. And there's always a reluctance for governments to increase taxes. So that's an easy solution. I think Ethereum, obviously it's not a government itself. And because it's, again, more of a consensus mechanism, obviously there's whales, there's Bitcoin whales as well that can affect the price too. But I wouldn't see, I don't think it's in the interest of the network per se, but obviously it is a risk. I wouldn't say that it's not a risk whatsoever. So you'd be a fool to say that it's not a risk, that, you know, the potential money supply increase for that is there. Yeah.
Just wondering, do you have a crypto equivalent of face drive?
I don't know.
Tell people what face drive is, because not everyone is in the equities world. So let them know about that.
Man. And maybe okay.
if you want, I wouldn't mind if you like did a quick monologue on the warning signs of stocks and whatnot being on the Adventure Exchange. Also a good topic for discussion here.
Yeah. So like, so Phase Drive is a company that's listed on the TSX Venture. So TSX Ventures are typically, for those of you not aware, it's like the baby exchange of the Toronto Stock Exchange. So typically they're smaller, they're lesser requirements to be listed on the TSX Venture versus the TSX. Phase Drive is a company that is run by a CEO that's really good at stock promotion. Let's just put it that way. And if you see any kind of Phase Drive articles, you'll see for the most part, you'll see some in the financial, not the Financial Time, but the Financial Post. You'll see some, and it's like in very small print, you'll have it that it was paid. And that's the only time that the CEO will actually make comments, is when it's like a paid advertisement. And this company just loves to just put out news out there. They pumped their valuation up to like close to $4 or $5 billion earlier this year. And you're talking about a company that came out with their financial results for the last year and have had, going on top of mine, I think $17 million, if I remember correctly. Actually, no, less than that. I think they had like about $8 million in revenue and something like $17 million in expenses. And so what they were doing is they were offering like basically free coupons to people who would use their products. So they do like ride sharing. They also do like kind of food delivery service. And their whole thing is like, is basically to say that they use electric vehicles. And somehow it's going to make them competitive against Uber and make them competitive against any of the other big players out there. So it's really a joke of a company, to be honest. They have a lot of insider holdings in terms of shares. They recently extended their lockout period because they knew it would kind of crater the stock itself. But they do have some institutional investors that will be unlocking the next couple of weeks, so it'll be interesting what happens. But you're talking about company that had pretty much close to the same amount of their revenue in marketing, in terms of marketing expenses.
Oh yeah. My god, yeah.
If you guys want to be entertained, you go on Yahoo Finance and you look at the discussion. It's full of like pumpers for the company. So every once in a while, I look at that. But So any questions?
In fairness, Len, I think our marketing budget's the same as our revenue, isn't it?
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, I mean, that's not. What do you mean? That's bad. We got a $1 billion valuation not 2 months ago.
Yeah, so I'm reading between the lines here. Ripple. He's saying Ripple is the Phase Drive equivalent. Sure. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I would say they're Ripple. I would say, you know, maybe not a Phase Drive equivalent, but Something I see and I can't believe is that that SafeMoon coin. What is it? With like one quadrillion in supply. So you see people on TikTok and social media, they're like, well, if it only goes up to like one, you know, it goes up to like a cent or a dollar, whatever it is, but people never take the time to multiply that by the total supply and see what the value would be. That one comes to mind. Obviously, Dogecoin is another one that's like a kind of head scratcher with, you know, the Doge master, Mr. Elon Musk. Just a quick mention on Elon. The reason why I get really annoyed with him is, you know, he tweets all the time. And I think he has fun, but, you know, I know some people got wrecked because of him because they listen to Elon. He's saying this. It may be a joke in his mind, but people, like, I listened to a podcast where this guy became a Doge millionaire because he took his life saving, levered them on Robinhood, and then, you know, became a millionaire. Well, Dogecoin has gone down like 60% since then, since I listened to that podcast. Like, I hope the guy is okay, but it's those kind of stories where, you know, he's a really smart guy, but I think understanding how he affects others is definitely not his strong suit.
We've talked before about how, like, and this is probably something you and Braden consider too, about how, like, especially in crypto and investing, there's just so much garbage out there. So if you have a platform and people follow your platform and stuff like that, like, I think obviously Twitter will never do anything about this because they never touch the big accounts except for Trump's. But like, you have a responsibility to the people that are listening to you, reading you, stuff like that. And so I was disappointed. We talked about that in our show too. I've been disappointed with a lot of the big names in Bitcoin and crypto in the last, 5-6 months. And it seems like that list is growing now with the environmental FUD and stuff like that. So you're right. I couldn't agree more. What do you think about this? We'll end off with this question. Then I got one more for you that's not on the list of approved commentary here. What do you think Bitcoin's going to do over the next 12 months? Not only in terms of price. I mean, we talk about price enough, but I think all of us agree that the price is kind of secondary at this point. What are you thinking in terms of adoption and maybe big stories that'll lead to major growth in the network? And I'll even let you talk about Ethereum too, because it's the nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can stick a bit more to Bitcoin. I'm fine with that. Personally, I think there's going to be a lot of institutional adoption, especially corporation. I'm not sure that pension plans or anything like that, any kind of major other types of institutional investor, I think that's going to take a bit more time. I know in Miami, the mayor over there, I think they're having some reserves of Bitcoin. I remember reading that. You're going to see more and more institutional adoption. I think it will probably be dependent a bit more on, the perception that Bitcoin uses green energy. Because I think that's a big push in the overall investment space about ESG. And when we say ESG, it seems to be focused on the E, and people tend to forget about the S and the G. That's because, you know, I've talked to people about ESG a lot before, and it's all about the environment, but people don't realize that it's also about social and governance. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a big push about the E in ESG for various institutional investor, maybe a bit less in the corporate world. So I think we'll see a bit more of, some companies adding their cash reserves, adding Bitcoin to their cash reserve on their balance sheet. I think we'll see more of that, especially with, you have MicroStrategy, you have Tesla, you have Square that has some on their balance sheet as well. So I think you'll see that. But the real money, the real big players with huge amounts of assets under management, I think that's probably going to be a more like medium to long term. I think there's going to have to be a bit more perception that Bitcoin uses a more green kind of energy overall. I think it already uses a pretty good amount of renewable energy. And I think it's only going to increase over time. But I think that'll probably be one of the biggest determining factors, just the perception, whether it's true or not. I think that'll be the biggest thing. And in terms of price, I mean, I think you guys probably understand that I don't really bother myself too much with the price. I have a good buddy of mine who is a Bitcoin maxi as well. And he's like, every month he has a different price prediction on the different article that he reads. And I'm like, dude, like, you're not selling. I'm not selling. Who gives a fuck, really? So that's kind of how I see it. And obviously, if you look at, you know, various Bitcoin Twitter, a lot of people say, look, you know, what does it matter what Bitcoin is in terms of fiat? You know, it really matters is the amount of Bitcoin you have. And that's definitely true to some extent. And especially with, you know, with inflation that we're seeing, and I think we're just seeing the beginning of inflation. I think more and more people will use Bitcoin as an inflation edge because, you know, I don't know about you, but just with the CPI data that we're seeing and with all its flaws, obviously CPI is not good at all. Sorry, I thought my order was here for a second. with inflation that we're seeing, I think it's pretty reasonable to expect that we'll see 5 to 10% inflation this year, probably even more than that. I'll just go and I'll be right back.
Fair enough. Okay, go. Okay. Get your order.
Yeah, sorry.
We're not editing this out.
No way.
It's not that kind of show. It's funny. I'll ask you, Len, because I want to ask him one other question that's not related to Bitcoin, but we'll ask him this when he gets back. If you had to pick one company to add to their balance sheet next, who do you think it'll be? Because I know what my pick is.
You'd say Apple, I'm assuming?
I'd say PayPal now. I wish it was Apple, but I think it's going to be PayPal now.
Given what news
given we're... Yeah, I think it's going to be PayPal now.
Well, aren't they kind of already there? I mean, you're looking for somebody that, I don't know, they probably do have it and it's going to be reported.
I don't know. I don't know if they do, but that would be my guess for next to add. So what's your guess?
You know what? With this whole FUD around the carbon energy, the energy and all this, I don't see Apple jumping on board for some time until they sort out this. So you're probably right. You know, just even jumping topics, this Bitcoin Mining Council, you know, for better or for worse, it's basically going to shine a light on the amount of energy that is being used to mine Bitcoin. And if it's going to be transferring, you know, the mining power from, like, say, coal or whatever to renewable energy, this is going to be a good thing. And it's going to be then at that point harder to refute Bitcoin as being a dirty source of energy. Because let's be honest, you know, all the goods we have in our home, it all comes from China. And, you know, if we all use coal energy to create it, why don't we throw this all on, you know, it's a lot of FUD and a lot of hypocrisy going on. You know,
isn't China the hub of ESG in the world? I thought it was.
It's, yeah, sure.
It's very, especially the S&G, I thought. Simone, what's your pick for next company to add to their balance sheet then? What do you think?
Yeah, I was listening to you guys. Oh, that's a good one. I was not in the list of pre-approved questions. So.
No, sir.
Yeah. Trying to think. I would probably... Berkshire, no.
Yeah, they're right up there.
Yeah, I would probably say, maybe, I don't know, maybe a company like Facebook, right? They had said that, what was it, their cryptocurrency they launched? I kind of forget.
Originally it was Libra, and then they switched Libra to something else.
It's called DM now. They're trying it again.
Yeah, and obviously it's kind of a more centralized model for them, but just their openness to it could be a company like Facebook or maybe even Google could be something like that. I wouldn't be surprised some of the big tech companies. I agree with you. I think Apple will probably be reluctant to add that to their balance sheet just because of the environmental FUD. I think those are good guests. Maybe, who knows, maybe Mr. Bezos after his MGM acquisition will... Well, I put a little bit of money in Bitcoin.
Amazon gang. Okay, we're going to let you go off this one, Simone. It's dinner time here in Ontario. So we appreciate your time. We'll let you give a handoff to your podcast after this final question. Braden, if you're listening, Simone, who would win a 100-meter dash, you or Braden? Concrete, not grass, running shoes, not cleats.
Oh, for sure, Braden, for sure. Yeah, well, it's just an age thing, right? I'm 35, he's 25, so... I mean, maybe, but I'd have to stretch and warm up for about like 15 minutes, 20 minutes before you could probably just go right off the bat. So, like, you guys are probably what, late 20s, early 30s?
No.
There?
No, Joey,
I'm 30. I'll be 34 in September. So, okay, I think I'll take him if you want. You want me to run in your place?
Well, I mean, I've had like a herniated in my back three times. I've had like a knee injury this year, knee bursitis. So that's why I'm like, Maybe prior to all of that, but right now I think I'm gonna stick to mountain bike and biking. Yeah, so it's a little easier on the joints. Yeah,
good idea. Okay, where can people find you? Give us your contact info one more time for the listeners, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, it's Canadian Investor Podcast. You can find us on any podcast platform that you listen to. You can find us on Twitter at CDN_investing. You can find me on Twitter at Fiat_iceberg. And yeah, we talk about just investing in general, typically a bit more about stocks, but you know, I'll get in a few like Bitcoin and crypto conversations in there. There's been definitely more and more people asking about us, asking us to talk about it. And you two clearly know more about Bitcoin than I do. But it's something I'm constantly kind of learning about, and I do enjoy the space. Yeah.
That's great. Okay. Thanks, brother. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah,
thanks for having me.